Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, once again, it's that time, everybody. It's that time on a Wednesday evening at the 8 to 9 p.m. hour. It is, once again, the K. Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I am who is known, not what is known, but who was known as the son, Citizen Payne, also known as Eric Payne to some, and to everybody else known as K. Thompson's son. So, I'm having a little trouble setting up some things here. My mom is doing a little bit, helping out with the technical stuff, which is rare. But that's what's happening, everybody. On the Wednesday, today is the 18th of October, and we got a lot of stuff going on. We're going to have a call in by some special people this evening, hopefully, if I can get somebody to call in here. And we'll see what's happening. I don't know why I'm having all this difficulty with the doggone technical stuff that I'm having going on, ladies and gentlemen, but we're going to work it out here. We're going to work it out here. I don't know what's going on, why this thing is not working too well, but we are working it out here. I think we might have it fixed, our technical difficulties fixed. You know, you got to, by hook or crook in the hood, you make it happen. So, there it is. Here, you want to say something, Ma? Since I got everything straight now, you can sit down and do your thing. And then we'll bring in our other co-hosts.
Eric, that was very amusing. But hello, everybody. Welcome to K. Thompson Live. Boy, we have a good show for you tonight. By the way, let me see. Well, who are we having on tonight? I think. Yeah, well, we'll get to that later.
Right.
But anyway, I was talking to, Angelo Ellerby. He's going to be coming on, sometime next week or the week after. And then also, I was talking to Vi Higginson. Vi Higginson was the writer, the producer, she with her family, with her sister and a few other people, of Mama I Want to Sing.
Right.
They're doing a brand new show over there.
Right.
So I talked to her, and then she's going to be coming on to tell us all about this. People are really being very creative in the arts, extremely creative. The films, the stories, the shows, boy, and it's really, really very, very exciting. And of course, if there's exciting stuff going on in the Washington area, I'm being light about this, but it's really incredible, absolutely incredible what is going on with that administration. It's you don't know what to think of it. You don't know what to say. You get angry and you get angrier. But it's best that you calm down. And I have difficulty doing that because it's so bad in Washington with the president of the most fantastic country, in the world. We are Americans. Is he? But this person is in the White House. How did he get there?
Okay. All righty. Let's bring in one of our resident guests. Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. It's getting to be that time. You're our resident guest, Mr. Byron Saunders. How you doing, Byron, tonight?
Oh, my good friends, thank you for another blessed day in paradise, I guess. And got up on this side of the flower bed today, and I'm okay with that, But boy, oh boy, Kay, you're right. It's some stuff going on down there in D.C. that just defies almost any kind of logic.
Yeah.
And I know we're going to talk about it tonight, so I'll wait for our esteemed host and co-host to initiate the conversation, and I'll jump in as usual.
Well, yeah. We have someone occupying the White House who is a despicable human being in my opinion. My opinion has actually dropped of Donald Trump. It has sunk of Donald Trump since he first got in office. A lot of people, if you listen to us talk about President, the guy being that's president now, I at first didn't think he was a racist. But judging from his actions, his continued actions, I think he has a negative, if not racist feelings towards black and brown people. He sure seems to not like us and doesn't seem to like Barack Obama because he seems to never miss an opportunity to lie about him. He doesn't seem to like Puerto Rican people, clearly, blaming them for the disaster that they're in. He doesn't seem to like Mexican people. He doesn't seem to like, you know, certainly black men. Black men, black athletes, if you look at the way he's attacking the members of the NFL. And clearly he has no compassion and doesn't know how to talk to people to console people. He can't be the consoler-in-chief if everybody is knowing about current conversation or the back and forth about the conversation that he had with one of the soldiers that was killed and the congresswoman that happened to overhear the conversation because it was on speakerphone. And Trump is so incapable of being respectful to anybody. It was, true to form. He was just disrespectful and didn't even know the guy's name. He's talking about the woman, didn't even know the woman's name, never used the word hero, none of that. And this guy was devastated. The death that this soldier took was that they couldn't even have an open casket. They just had the remains of him, unfortunately. David Johnson, I believe his name is.
Right.
So the behavior of this guy who occupies the White House, this despicable human being who occupies the White House, is ridiculous. And he said, what did he say? The congresswoman said that he was disrespectful, was really kind of cold in the way he dealt with it. And then he says, well, he has tape. The phone conversation was taped. And then he has proof. So because he's firing off on his Twitter thing, he's got we got the first commander in chief who's got to get in personal fights with everybody. And so with the Twitter action, he Twitters off. The congresswoman is totally fabricated, like he always does, lying, making stuff up, totally fabricated, and I got proof. I got a tape. They ask him today, where's the tape? Well, let her say it again, and we'll see. We're doing schoolyard stuff. We're doing schoolyard stuff with this idiot, lying, and then when he gets called out, like, we'll do it one more time, and then she's going to see. What kind of Twilight Zone are we in with this guy? This is unbelievable. Go ahead, Byron.
Eric, the thing that's two things that's really stick out to me about, first, the lie. We know he's a pathological liar. So the lie, and with all due respect to the tapes that the White House may or may not have, what they should have had, it's not that difficult. It was a cell phone conversation. And we all have to do is go to the cell phone provider and pull down. The National Security Agency knows how to get that conversation. So let's just dismiss that one totally. The thing that's more disturbing is this. Over two-thirds, probably about 70% of our tax dollars goes to the military budget. He increased the military budget this year by, what, another $26 billion? So that increases it to almost 70% of our money is going to improve the military, protect the military, give them better weapons, and yet we have no better intel report regarding the Niger Green Beret death. Now, somewhere in the Congress has to be a better explanation of why we need to keep giving more and more and more of our tax dollars to a military conglomeration that can't protect its soldiers. Let alone it was an operation, but we have no idea what the operation was. And yet It took 12, 14 days to get some information. This is what's really more important than I think, and I'm not taking anything away from the tragedy. I watched that. I cried yesterday. I watched that pregnant mother and that daughter who looked at what was going on, and you can tell me that in 10 years this is not going to impact on her and that unborn child that was laying up against that casket. And there's no VA administration in this country that will be able to sustain or give that family the help that they need, because a lot of this, And here we're going to go back to say it again. And Kay, thank you for really coming to say it, because it's not only in the president's administration, even the NFL. I watched that entire display by Commissioner Goodell, and you know the one word he couldn't come out of his mouth. He was paralyzed to say it. White people can't say racism. They have a hard time saying racism.
Yeah, pretty much. Most of them. They had a hard time admitting that the United States was a racist country.
Acknowledging it, absolutely. And so, I mean, and it's really, it's so sad to see our armed forces, men and women, who engage in protecting our rights, come back home to the same things that happened in World War One, actually the Civil War, World War One, Korea, Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq, two campaigns in Iraq, and an ongoing Afghanistan. And when you come back home as African American men and women who have given their lives, and then you're going to castigate or even castrate an athlete who kneels on the battlefield of his chosen profession and say that it's un-American? How dare you? How dare you even utter those words when ultimately those men who are out there on that playing field have what, a lifespan in the league for about 4 years, and then they have to be confronted with CTE, which is a brain-damaged individual that's just like PTSD? So somewhere we have missed. You know what I'm saying, Eric? I mean, think about that.
You're
we got a problem, Houston.
You're covering the gamut of it all. I mean, we do have a problem. We got a guy in the White House who's a traitor who committed treason to be there, and there is nothing sacred. There is nothing that he gives with any respect or reverence other than himself and how the world revolves around himself. And really what is the tragedy is that all of these people are out here. I mean, we have his base. There's a certain percentage of the base that supports them that are pretty much racist and prejudiced and want to see in America that has a class system, treating African-Americans like second-class citizens or almost subhuman. And to have this individual in there that he's their guy. Clearly, he's shown himself to be that. But what's the real tragedy is that he's not out for them, and it's going back to the age-old thing that these people think that just because he talks like them or walks like them, he's going to look out for them. And also a lot of these people, you know, looking out for the terrorists, the white nationalists and the KKK, how he has nothing bad to say about them, but everything bad to say about the anti-fascists and the Black Lives Matters and all of that stuff. So this guy, he's got there just by the skin of his teeth, by mobilizing that base that's very energized. But the real devastating and despicable thing is how the rest of the Republican Party is really having to be raked over the coals literally before they come out and speak against this man. I mean, you know, what's-his-face Corker finally got fed up with it, saying, you know, what he said about the White House being an adult daycare center. John McCain, even though he comes out every once in a while, still is trying to avoid things and a battle with this president. They got this guy Steve Bannon who's rallying the racists and the white nationalists that's attacking Mitch Collins. It's really kind of funny how much they want to outdo each other. Who can be more hateful? Who can be more hateful to other people? And they're going after one guy because he's not hateful enough, and they all want to rally and get rid of him because they want to be even more hateful. So it really is kind of funny, but the despicable thing for this guy to get up there with Mitch McConnell and claim, when asked, did you call the families, because it's been 9 days before you called them, his whole thing is everything he wants to, and obviously he's got this thing where he wants to dismantle everything that Barack Obama did. He wants to trash his opinion. He wants to trash his reputation. Every opportunity that he gets to trash Obama, he does not miss an opportunity, and it is unprecedented in the presidency, but it's also, you know, with the first black president too. And I don't know if another individual, even if John McCain got elected, I don't think that he would do that. I think there are other people that understand the sanctity and the honor that goes in with certain things that the country is trying to live up to. At least those guys, even though there are, a lot of them are full of it too, but at least they try to give lip service, at the very least, let's say, to the alleged high morals that America claims to have, because, you know, we claim to have these high morals in America. You know, they say things like, you know, the last greatest hope on the face of the earth, and we have the best fighting force, and America's the place. Really, is it? Because the way our society is, a society that's based on keeping human beings as slaves, and then continues to perpetuate that system, trying to find different forms of that system. And then when those individuals try to rise up or just seek to be free and live, the very notion of us just trying to live in existence really drives some of these people up a wall, which is unbelievable.
Well, you know, Eric, you bring up
existence in life.
Yeah, you bring up a very interesting point, which is not just in the administration or those in Congress, but on an interesting blog note today, African-American gentlemen questioned the comments of the mother and the congresswoman to doubt that they were being honest, and in his comments suggested he wanted to hear specifically from the wife of the conversation that she and Trump had. And so I wrote to him, responded, because he had responded to my blog, and I said, well, later this afternoon, the wife confirmed the conversation that the mother and the congresswoman had detailed relative on to their conversation she had with the president on the way to the airport. And then I asked him very honestly, without any, you know, without any consternation whatsoever, I said, why do you feel it necessary to question the validity of these two African-American women over the comments of a confirmed pathological liar in Trump, who you've seen lie time after time and so on so many things? I said, please help me understand your rationale in your hesitance to accept their comments as truthful. Because there's a psychology and a psychosis that is, you know, it continues to infect so many people in America that are in constant denial of the election hacking outcome, the extent of the devastation in Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands, video cams that catch police in bald-faced lies killing unarmed African Americans. I mean, it's et cetera, et cetera. Somewhere along the line, we need the mental health society to try to explain this to us, because this is not just a phenomenon of white people in denial. We got a lot of African-American people who won't even trust our own people.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing. I mean, I've seen a lot of individuals. I've seen a lot of these individuals on, you know, on the social networks too, and all upset about the protests of the NFL. You know, I mean, it's that small percentage, and I don't know how they get to that perspective, but it is that small percentage, that 2%, that 8% of African Americans that vote Republican, and it's that.
Well, you know,
to me, the House,
even Charles,
it's to me, hold on,
even
it's
Commissioner,
me, it's House,
even Commissioner Roger Goodell today, when he,
the House,
yeah,
it's the House Negro mentality to me that they have when they try to speak on behalf and totally ignore. I saw one guy said, you guys are speaking about your oppression or so-called oppression, so perceived oppression. It's like, really, bro? Really? You don't see any oppression that African Americans experience in this country? I mean, it's really despicable. I mean, and it's bizarre that these people, like you said, doubt their own and put trust in this man who's proven in the course of the very press conference that he said,
yeah,
Obama didn't call, and then when the reporter from NBC followed up and said, no, they all called, and then blame it, throw somebody else under the bus. Well, that's what somebody told me.
And I want
some of these reporters to have a follow-up question where they say, well, who told you that, Mr. President? If you're not sure about that, why would you say it? Nobody ever follows up to get this guy in lies. They just let it lay there, and they don't pursue it. And just let it, you know, you've got to really pinpoint it with this individual.
Well, you know, Eric, one of the things that it was very interesting today in watching the NFL commissioner, even he standing at the podium in a very detailed, you know, press conference about the owners and the meeting that they had today. Do you know that the commissioner stood there and said that the protesters only numbered about six men in total? He actually repeated that. I said, excuse me, how many brothers have you seen on television or in pictures in kneeling form that are NFL players, Eric? Come on, please confirm my visual.
Yeah, you know, everybody thinks, I mean, it's not unknown what everybody thinks about Rodgers.
Yeah, six protesters. I mean, that's like this culture of lying and deception and obfuscation, whatever you want to call it. This is a culture that is permeated into our entire American structure. And it's being recognized as acceptable. It's a virtual reality world where lying overcomes truth.
Right.
What is truth anymore?
It really wasn't started with Trump. It started with Bush, right? I mean, they lied.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Made that up. Lied about that. I saw a news. I was watching either Lawrence O'Donnell or Rachel last night, and they were talking about the last 2 years of the Bush administration where they had lost the credibility.
That's right.
I mean, they had no credibility anyway going in, but they had very little credibility. Dick Cheney was out of sight. George Bush didn't come out and campaign for the Republican candidate. So it just showed you how it started with them. It started with George Bush getting in office based on a technicality again. The electoral vote got him in again under suspect circumstances. And here comes Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, they laid the ground for Trump. I mean, a lot of these people, Republicans are so appalled now by the way he is acting. They laid the groundwork in some of the things that they were doing. So,
yes.
I mean, to turn around, Paul, they brought us, they're the ones who brought us Sarah Palin. I mean, Nicole Wallace, guy, Steve, whatever, who was McCain's. You guys are the ones that brought us these kind of Tea Party individuals and acted like it was all right. And now they're having second thoughts because the craziness of the guy that's in there now is even coming back to harm them.
Yeah.
Because it was just us, you know, they wouldn't be speaking up as loudly.
Oh, my goodness, no. Definitely.
Here's another thing. I mean, I just wanted to say about the anthem, as far as the anthem, you know, there's a lot of things, anthems, these monuments, you know, and you have a lot of folks, a lot of white folks who can't seem to understand, well, this is our anthem. You know, if you know the history of the anthem, it was just they started playing it at a baseball game in the 1900s, and they always played it from that time. It was never deemed the national anthem, first off. Secondly, when we have a country that historically has been racist, has been, an oppressive society, right? So everything that was done, most decisions that were made in terms of what monuments and what parks and who we're going to name stuff after and who's going to be on the stamp and yada, 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 was all made from that perspective, right? From that viewpoint. So if they decided to say, let's honor General and down south, even though the South lost the war and America was all one, but if down south they decided to put up a monument for Robert E. Lee, I guess we just had to go with it without any regard of everybody, of the people that might be insulted by a statue of the guy who was a proponent of keeping people in chains. So the perspective, the point of view that our society was built on and the perspective and the slant it was taken was like from a white person's perspective. And I'm sure that a lot of white people, like a lot of black people, don't understand the racial connections and ramifications of almost every aspect of our society, right? Because if people could just get together and say, yeah, we all vote, let's build a statue of Robert E. Lee and this and that, they're not taking into consideration, well, some people might not find that statue something honorable. That might be represent a symbol of hate to some people. Some people might not find the term Washington Redskins or Cleveland Indians. Some people might find that offensive. But if you're coming from a certain perspective where you don't have to take in other people's points of view and it's just us and we live in our life a certain way and America is this and that, I guess you don't have to take into consideration that the guy who wrote our national song that we all want to stand up for every time was a proponent and a slave owner. I didn't know that either.
Right.
But the whole
yeah.
thing is, once you know better, you need to do better, right? All these people
yes,
walking
sir.
Around, well, we've been looking at that. If you know, well, I mean, you know, I had a friend, I used to wear Hugo Boss shirts. I had a Jewish friend tell me that, you know, Hugo Boss was a designer for the Nazi SS uniforms. Stop wearing that shirt. Why?
Right.
Because, first of all, he was someone that worked in the oppression and the annihilation of a race of people, first off. Secondly, I don't want anybody that I might know that happens to be Jewish to think that I'm down or support an individual like that.
Right.
So once you know better, you need to do better. You can't just
Amen.
Say it doesn't affect me all the time. And here these guys, these right. are black athletes. Most athletes are black, and they got to stand for a song written by a guy who would see people that look like them in chains. Now, sure,
exactly.
A reasonable-minded person would clearly understand African Americans' objection towards standing for a song that was written by a slave owner. Now that we know, we need to do better. We need to not have
yeah.
that be the anthem anymore. Say, Mom.
Yeah. I wanted to say that on CNN, you know, they were saying that a $25,000 check was going to be going to the soldier, what was his name? I forget, I have it right here somewhere. David Johnson, I think his name was, right?
Okay, yeah.
And it's not going to be sent until the story hits the Washington Post. Get to that. Also, later on tonight, everybody, you know, Paul Ryan and Bernie Sanders are going to be debating each other on CNN. Just some interesting
yeah.
information, you know.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders, he should have run for the, yeah, he did run for the presidency.
Right.
He should have won.
Right. Should have.
Because he can be very, very strong and as nasty
yeah.
as Trump.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
You know,
the
thing about the national anthem and the standing is and this is where it really shows you the lack of understanding the history of this country. It was a Supreme Court decision in June 14, 1943, that ruled that no one can be forced to participate in patriotic rituals as the Pledge of Allegiance and the National Anthem. It's the law. They don't need to reinstate a law. The Supreme Court has already ruled on this. And that's what's really so impactful when you understand and begin to realize the deconstruction of the federal authority of this land is the deep state situation that Bannon and Trump have been running on, which is to render the federal government completely and totally dysfunctional so that they can return it back to states' rights. This is the same issue the Civil War was fought. It's not new, but when you begin to realize how they've obstructed those who have been circumventing the law of the land, here it is, right here, a June 14, 1943 Supreme Court ruling. As it's already stated, you don't have to stand for the national anthem or say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Right. That's called freedom
it's in
of speech.
The books.
You don't have to.
That's right. It's in the books. Just obey the law.
And the other thing about,
yeah.
about the national, I just wanted to say about the national anthem being played, you know. And I read this article a while ago. It was an article that came out talking about that the NFL, the Army paid the NFL to do
yes.
these displays of patriotism, that it was
yes.
a marketing ploy that's been in effect since for the last 3 or 4 years. And that's why
that's
you
right.
see it now, the soldiers come out with the flags and you got the flyovers, because the Army paid the NFL to do that, to market, to get more people to recruit. It wasn't a patriotic. I mean, it was. I guess you could call it patriotic if you got to pay them as a marketing tool. But, I mean, it wasn't like let's just the NFL say let's just – no, it's a business decision. Like everything else in the United States, everything is driven by money. We're a capitalist society. We're going to act like we're all moral and everything. The bottom line is about the money. And I think that if the, there was a play – I know you remember this play, Byron, by Douglas Turner Ward. I know you remember this play, Day of Absence.
Day of Absence? Play, oh, absolutely.
I think all black athletes, you just have a day of absence.
Let's go.
Not show up.
That's right.
Let them – let you know what? Y'all want us to stand for the slave owner? Here, you guys play. You guys want to act like you want to come see the best? Check it out. The best ain't playing today. The best is taking the day off. Y'all do the sports yourselves. Then you know what I'm saying? Let's stop doing this.
Well, they tried that during the last NFL strike when they had the replacement players, and it didn't work. So it's if they want to go down that road, the players have the power. And one more thing, that unfurling of the flag on the field that they so grandly show you as the military personnel are holding the flag, the big giant flag, that is a violation of the flag code itself.
Right, because you're not supposed to have a flag.
That's right.
It reverts back to everything going out for the almighty dollar in the United States. We might as well put that on the flag, right? You've seen those same reports we all have about the conduct of the flag. How do you handle the American flag? And we've been breaking those rules, you know. And I knew that as a kid. You're not supposed to make clothes out of the American flag. If you remember back in the 70s when the hippie cats started doing that as a protest to the Vietnam War, a lot of the more conservative older people got very upset about that. When that American flag shirt was first made, that I guess in Forrest Gump, it's when they recreate that scene where Abby Hoffman, where they did the thing at the Washington Monument. I think that character was supposed to be Abby Hoffman, who first wore this shirt that was the American flag and caught a lot of flack for it. I mean, I was a kid then, but I remember it being a serious news story and people having problems with that. Then it eventually became okay. Obviously, when the other people started doing it, people started co-opting. When everybody starts doing it, suddenly it becomes okay. And certainly certain things become okay in America when people start making money off of it and it starts turning a profit. But then it started becoming okay that people would wear the American flag as a garment and do things with it where it wasn't supposed to touch the ground, never supposed to touch the ground, right? That's the thing you learn going to camp.
And if you're
a Boy Scout or whatever, flag you never supposed to. And you also learn how to fold it, too, to be quite honest.
That
people don't learn, you know. So, I mean, it's just how these individuals want to twist, not even twist, they just make up the truth. They just lie and make stuff up. We got a president that lies and just makes stuff up, just cause, you know. And this is an individual, I always say it again, the first time I ever heard about Donald Trump, I was about 18, and it's when they were talking about bringing casino gaming to the state of New Jersey. And at this particular point, people like Trump and other developers were coming in, buying up land in Atlantic City to build their and develop their casinos. And there was one lady, old white lady, who didn't want to sell out. Me, I was thinking, wow, that's the perfect scenario. You got a billionaire, millionaire guy coming in. He wants to buy your property up. I didn't realize at the time that he probably was giving people pennies on the dollars, probably what he was offering. But this lady didn't want to sell, and she didn't seem to have anywhere to go, didn't seem to have any family. This was a news story I saw on it. And she was standing up to him. And then they interviewed Donald Trump. And I just remember that what stuck in my mind, what sticks in my mind all these years later, is that his callous approach to it. And it was something that it was just cold, like, yeah, well, they could try it and stand in the way, but we'll eventually win out. It was just a straight business decision to him. And in all honesty, I don't know if he knew that it was an old lady who didn't have anywhere to go that was holding out or whatever, and they were building around her place, you know, just starting construction around her, you know, and kind of just making it really uncomfortable to be there for her, obviously. But it stuck with me. How cold and callous his reaction was to some of these people losing their thing. That always stuck with me about Donald Trump. And then as the years went on, I began to hear about this individual over and over again, and mostly just kind of being like the rich, seemed like he was going to be a rich, cool guy, but he ended up being a rich jerk. So
Kay, that should be very considered because it's one that's not being discussed, and it involves Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. And here's the scenario, which is, it's almost to the point where even speaking of it in this term is a conspiracy, but it's not without pause. The federal government owns Washington, D.C., Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, U.S. Virgin Islands, and Guam, their territories. The reason why Puerto Rico's debt is in the shape that it is because Congress has not been appropriating the necessary funds to keep the land of Puerto Rico accountable. And they don't have a voting a congressperson, so they depend all of their funding based on the legislation of funding and the appropriations bill, same as Washington, D.C., same as the U.S. Virgin Islands, and the same as Guam. Now, we all know what they were trying to do to Cuba in the Batista years when they were trying to create a Caribbean island that would be the complement to Las Vegas, and of course, they didn't succeed because of Che Guevara and Fidel Castro. However, the devastation in Puerto Rico is so bad that in order to for the federal government to enhance its image with respect to saving Puerto Rico would be then to go in and claim by eminent domain those territories, those real estate, that land that is cannot be saved and would ultimately tell the people who are living in these displaced areas that they have been condemned. As I said on a show several weeks ago, Puerto Rico is the pharmaceutical capital of the United States. These are the headquarters of most of the pharmaceutical companies are in Puerto Rico. People in Puerto Rico are actually guinea pigs to many of the experiments that the pharmaceutical companies want to have. And ultimately, they have been subjected almost like the people in Tuskegee. It's unspoken. It's a horror story that we don't speak of. But the worst horror story is because we are being controlled by oligarchs and the billionaires in this country, they need another place to launder all their money again. And I'm going to ask this question. We just had on the stock market that hit over 23,000 this week, first time ever. Who's making all the money? And if they're making all that money, why did we lose over 300,000 jobs last month? Somebody explain to me that theory that we're supposed to be giving another tax break to engage in creating this trickle-down theory where give the corporations a tax break and they can provide more jobs in this country. Well, they just hit the record in making money this week, and we lost 300,000 jobs last month. Now, you compile that to the situation in Puerto Rico, where right today, as we are having this conversation on this radio show, there's still people who have had no water. They're drinking water from wells that have been contaminated. And at the point at which, when they start to get sick and start dying and have no access to any kind of medical health, watch what I tell you, where Congress, these same oligarchs who are in the, whose pockets are lined by pharmaceutical companies, will begin to engage in this concept of eminent domain and trying to change what Puerto Rico and Virgin Islands have already been. And I'm still watching the commercials on television where the cruise ships are still taking you to these islands where people, white people mostly, and you see the commercials, there are very few black people who are in those commercials except for servicing as butlers, chefs, you know, table waiters in the commercials, right, for most of these resorts where, you know, they're not for us. We got a serious problem.
Well, this is what I'm talking about, a certain projection, a projection to the world of what they see, you know, a certain projection that everybody else is there to serve them and they're the dominant race. You know, in Puerto Rico, they got to drink that. That's the flip side of all those pharmaceutical companies. You know, they got a couple of Superfund sites, those sites, and now the people got to drink the water there because Trump and these guys don't want to get them the water. I saw on the news report today or yesterday that only 16% of the island has power, and this is ridiculous.
Right.
This is They're doing them. They're giving them, doing them the same thing that the Bush administration did to black people in Hurricane Katrina. They're doing the
It's even worse than that, Eric, because now, I don't know if you've seen the video about how they transformed a Walmart into an internment camp. And if they have to start evacuating the people from Puerto Rico, where do you think they're going to go? They're either going to go to Florida, which would change the outcome of Florida elections, because that's a lot of Latinos in Florida, not just Puerto Ricans, they're Cubans. But if they're coming here, they're the second largest population of Puerto Ricans in America is New York City. And
yeah,
so they're going, thank you. And ultimately, we already have a housing problem here in New York. So where are they going to go? If they have to evacuate people from those islands, where are they going to place them? The federal government is in charge of Puerto Rico.
Explain the housing problem in New York there for people who might
housing
not
problems
be aware.
In New York is this. We don't have because of air rights and land rights in New York City alone, there are no new developments. And ultimately you got people living in these houses that are row houses, that are, let's just pick a neighborhood. I mean, you can pick the, certainly you could go to the places like Bed-Stuy, where you have gentrification really taking over and moving out the traditional residents to places outside of New York City, because our people can't afford to purchase those million-dollar brownstones that they're now selling. And ultimately, there's not building any new houses. And when you start to build new developments, now because of air rights, the add-on to the air rights costs is prohibitive. And who can afford to build new buildings if you're not a developer? Trump can afford it. He's one of those developers, even though he lost $600 million this week. You know, but that you think that bothers him?
I was under the impression, let me ask you this since you're there in New York, that de Blasio was working to make housing more affordable. What is the, and some people claiming that he's not, what is the real deal there?
The real deal on that, the affordability of the of those properties that have either been warehoused, like pick a space like Williamsburg or on the Brooklyn side, because that's where he is, his central location is. You look at the Long Island City, that used to be a warehouse district area, and you can't afford to live over there now. In the Williamsburg area, that used to be another warehousing district. Williamsburg is another gentrified community. All along the East River side, all the way down to the tip of Brooklyn on the East River side, all the way up to Long Island City, and including a piece of Astoria. All of that development area now, which used to be warehouse, is all now high-rise living. And in order to get the contracts of developers to get access to city funds, they have to, by law, you know, submit plans for affordable housing to low-income and middle-income families. And they'll get the contract, but they're not providing massive amounts of units for those folks. That's a controlled situation. So it's not to the advantage of a person like myself who's on a fixed income. I'm a senior citizen. I'm on Social Security, and I live in a post-war apartment that's in the middle of Midwood, Brooklyn. And I'm surrounded by affluent Russian Jewish community. And they're not building any new spaces. The new spaces that they are building, I can't afford to live in those places. These condos, these high rises that are going up, and they are building them. Make no mistake about it. I've got three in my block alone that have torn down the old and building up brand new. And I'm seeing these are serious condos. And nobody can afford that in my situation. And then when you look at the affordable housing for seniors, low income, the list is so long that by the time you get called up on the list, you'd be dead and gone.
Hmm. So I got my question is, where are all these wealthy people coming from that are moving into New York?
Well, they're coming from here. Here's the answer to that. The reason why they're moving back in is because it's become so expensive to keep living, to be able to keep driving in. The drive time for living in Long Island, coming in on the LIE, is the city's largest parking lot. Any single day, just pick a day, and you believe me, at rush hour going in and coming out is like a parking lot. And they're all going out to Long Island communities. And the energy cost, gasoline cost, is stripping them of their income, so that if they're working in the city, it's prohibitive to keep driving back and forth. And therefore,
right,
it's easier to displace a poor community so that they can then engage in making it affordable and for those who are tired of living in the suburbs and want to live closer to their jobs. It's an insidious situation, because when they deconstructed the Central Business District, they took all the money from the Central Business District to build the suburbs and stripped the city, especially the city where people of color were living, to strip them of their services that naturally their tax base would have been able to continue to support them. Now that they've put all the money back in the suburbs, now they're trying to get folks to move back in. And gentrification is a process where they are able to condemn certain facilities or move out those who in the rent-controlled areas, because when you move out of a rent-controlled situation, the price goes up automatically.
All right, Byron.
We don't own.
Let's put a pin in it right
we don't
there.
Own
I want to go to our next. Right, we
sure.
don't own anything.
Go ahead.
I'll put an end to that conversation right now. Let's go through this caller right here, get his opinion on things. Hey, how you doing, Congressman?
Good evening. How are you?
All right. Thanks for calling into the show, Congressman Donald. Calling into the show this evening in the final about 10 minutes that we have. I wanted to get your thoughts about the events of the day, in particular this back and forth between one of your colleagues in the Congressional Black Caucus, Frederica Wilson, I believe, Congressman Wilson, and the president's call to the young grieving widow. And also his also claimed that, you know, the lie that he was called out on, saying that President Obama never called any people. What's your take on the current news about that?
Well, I just have been of the opinion that prior to today, that the president couldn't stoop any lower, but looks like I was wrong. What transpired today with this widow of this soldier is reprehensible. You do not say those type of things to people. And it is just an inability of his to conduct himself in a manner in which he has any couth, any diplomacy, any compassion, nothing, absolutely no human emotion or feeling at all in this man. And it is horrific to think that you would sit there as she's on her way to gather the remains of her husband, that you say, well, you know, he knew what he was getting into. I'm just through. I'm done. I cannot take it anymore. I cannot tolerate it anymore. This is a Gold Star family. This soldier gave his life for this country, and I'm just beside myself. I'm sorry you started with that. I don't know how much further I can go on, really. I'm just very emotional about it. It makes it, it really, it's a sheer embarrassment. It makes no sense. And I just don't know what to do. I just am baffled.
What's your assessment of some of your across the aisle colleagues in terms of, you know, what the leader of their party is doing? I mean, what do you feel, or what's coming back from them? Are they, I mean, because clearly this is a presidency that is like no other, and he does not seem to recognize decorum or tradition or respect or anything like that. And to have the Republicans who seem to enable this guy, what's the mood down there with some of these individuals from your perspective and other Democrats?
Well, it's like you said, it's like no other presidency because it's unpresidential, period. And that's it in a nutshell. A lot of my colleagues who don't say it out loud but are just as embarrassed, but you know, they have certain political goals and agendas that they want to meet, so they're willing to try to ride it out as long as they can. You know, they are they're a dead set, you know, to try to get tax cuts. They've wanted that for three decades, and, you know, it looks like with this president they were going to get close, so they're willing to kind of go along with the madness to, you know, meet their ultimate goal in reducing taxes and eliminating the Affordable Care Act. But there are a lot of them that are just as embarrassed and mortified as we are, and they just won't say it yet. But I think today was a new low. Well, just think, you know, you hear John McCain talk about it, and you hear, you know, Senator Corker talk about it. You know, Corker is not running again, so he's free to say what he wants to say. So just think, the only difference between Corker and the other members is that they're going to run again. He's not. So now that he's not running, this is what he's saying. So there has to be a large number in their caucus that feel the same way, but they're just not willing to say so out in the open. John McCain has been clear. Corker has made the case, and they're not the only two.
We have our resident guest, Byron Saunders, on the line. Byron, do you have a question for Congressman Payne?
Absolutely. Yes, Congressman Payne, thank you for your continued service representing New Jersey and America. Question is about the stock market and the tax breaks. I understand the tax breaks will give the 1% and corporate America an opportunity to make a lot of more money than they already making already. But we just hit 23,000 in the stock market, which means that corporate America, a lot of people made a lot of money this week, okay? But where are the jobs? We lost over 300,000 jobs last month. And that says to me that somewhere along the line, why, asking me, who is not an economist, but makes me ask the question, why are we going to give a tax break when we're already making hand over fist money in the stock market? Please explain.
Because they want more.
That's the answer, yeah. That's honest.
But the correlation is there. The stock market goes up. They're record numbers. They're breaking the record every day. And you lost 300 jobs last month. That's where the profits are.
Yeah.
You're alleviating jobs. If you lose 300,000 jobs in the market, naturally that money is going to show up somewhere, and it shows up in the stock market, you know, for these profiteers. So naturally there's a correlation. If jobs go down, the market's going to go up because there's more profit because you're not using it to pay people.
So it becomes profit.
And you know, it makes this kind of makes one realize the balancing act, where you have under President Obama's watch, the market was improving, was getting a, obviously turned the whole economy around, but also the fact that he was adding jobs every month. The jobs cut the unemployment rate in half during his administration, and jobs were being created every month. There weren't negative jobs. There weren't jobs being lost, but jobs were being created while the stock market was doing well. And I guess that highlights the balancing act of when we want of how we want all Americans to do well equally. And here, I guess it's a perfect example of what the emphasis of the Republicans and people like Trump are when the stock market is doing good but jobs are going down. Is that basically the correlation or the balancing act in your eyes, Congressman?
Absolutely. And, you know, we know that President Trump is, you know, a part of the elite 1%. So naturally, you know, things are going to be skewed his way. So absolutely, the direct correlation.
What's your feeling about the budget and things? And what realistically do you guys see that you guys are going to be able to get done, or that they're going to come up with anything decent in terms of any type of legislation, because they've got a lot of things they're trying to get done, but they can't seem to get their own house in order to get things done. Do you think that they're going to come up with anything productive to do before the end of the term?
I don't see where anything's really going to get done before the end of the year. We only have so many legislative days left on the calendar anyway. Before you start having the recesses for Thanksgiving and Christmas and the New Year. So, you know, there's a very limited number of days left on the calendar. And, you know, based on the way they've been moving to this point, I don't foresee them being able to do very much before the year is out.
That's it.
I could be wrong, and, you know. Well, think, you know, in Washington, too, you know, you can – now, I can tell you that tonight and, you know, Monday morning they'll be on the Affordable Care Act again trying to repeal it or trying to move a tax bill. So it's very – you know, it's there's no regular order, which is one of the things that John McCain continues to talk about. A regular order is having notice on different bills, having different committee hearings on them, having second readings of the bill, going back to committee, amending it, and then finally presenting a piece of legislation that everybody has put their hands on, and then vote on, and then send it to the president, where hopefully he can sign it into law. So there's no regular order, so these pieces of legislation are being crafted by four or five people in their staff in the back room, and then they throw it out there for you to vote on, and, you know, you haven't even had a chance to read it, and they want you to vote on it. You know, that is where the entire legislative system is broken down in the House of Representatives. You have a few people, the Gang of Eight or whatever, the Tuesday morning gang or whatever these groups are, that go in, they create the legislation, not a majority, a few powerful members that have leverage. They go in and they create these things and then just want you to come out and vote for them. And that is not the way that the forefathers saw this process working. The whole thing has broken down along party lines. And, you know, and really the Republicans are the ones that have damaged the system. They don't like the federal government. I'm sorry.
We got to go. You get the last word, Congress. We've got 10 seconds. Thank you so much, Congressman Donald Payne Jr., calling at the last moment. Thank you, Congressman. Say thank you.
All right.
Thank you. All right. Thank you to our resident guest host, Mr. Byron Saunders. Byron.
Peace and love, always.
Cheers, sir. And thanks once again, everybody, for listening to the Kay Thompson Live show. Kay Thompson Live, I'm the son, Eric Payne. You are?
Yes, I'm Kay Thompson. You can tune in every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. for Kay Thompson Live.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.